right. This is a lecture concerning the fundamentals of Scientology as they exist here in mid-February of 1956. The basics and the exact rationale on which we are working. It's very important that you know these because it may change a few minds. Now, let me be very blunt right here at the beginning. A great many auditors fail to get results because of a certain obsession they have. The obsession is a very simple obsession. They are trying desperately to make nothing out of everything. Make that very clear. They are trying to make nothing out of everything. It's easy for a Thetan to get into this obsession with this fact. He actually is a static. Therefore, mass is not duplicatable 100% by him. You have that? He doesn't 100% duplicate mass because he himself is a static, so it is really impossible for him to exactly duplicate mass. When he starts to quarrel with mass, he ceases to duplicate. You see this? And so he thinks the only way out for him, because of this inability to duplicate, this inability to, and it is a native inability, you understand, he gets to a point eventually where he makes nothing out of everything. And he thinks the only way he can possibly be free is for everything to be gone. Everything. Space, walls, nest universe, his own universe, say nothing of his body, and he therefore chops everything into ribbons. And he will do this to preclears. He thinks the best way to audit a preclear is just chopping the ribbons. Now, the odd part of it is, we have, when an auditor is doing that, completely aside from a bit of an obsession working, we have something else at work. And that something else is just this. It's a misapprehension of the goal of processing. We, being Western civilization people, have been subjected to a considerable amount of barrier. We have been subjected in the past ages to more restriction than we had freedom. And therefore, we have begun to point in the direction of greater freedom. And we interpreted this and interpret it now as greater freedom equals no barriers. If you define freedom as ability to choose barriers and choose freedom, you would then have a more sensible statement. But even so, the statement is too liable to interpretation by people who are trying to make nothing out of everything, and so let us restate the goal of processing in terms which will be much clearer. And the goal of processing is precisely this. It is the making of a better game. Processing then enables the individual to have a game or have a better game. The goal of processing is not freedom. Unless you consider freedom, freedom of power of choice. And that is too slippy for some people to quite grasp. So let's just put it bluntly. The goal of processing is a game, a better game, or some game. Now, individuals who are unhappy don't have a game. You process them, and they are able to have a game. Some of them, you will discover, have only the game of being processed. Fabulous, but they do. And it's up to you as an auditor to get them out of this, because that's a very limited game indeed. Now, where we have case failure, we have an auditor's, this is factual, true, it sounds awfully hard, it's terribly hard to swallow and accept this as a responsibility, but we actually have an auditor's misapprehension of what he is doing. He thinks he is trying to exteriorize somebody. He thinks he is trying to restore freedom to somebody, and he is not doing this, because if he just does that, he will not restore any freedom of choice. A person who is making nothing out of everything will gladly, happily sit there and go right straight out through the bottom, making nothing out of everything. This is the darndest thing you ever saw in your life. He will make nothing out of everything, his bank, his body, He'll get so he can't see the walls, and he's getting worse and worse, and he's less and less able, and he's less and less able to change his postulates. He's more and more going out on a destruction end. He's not becoming smarter or more able to handle the body or anything else, and that he will sit there in that preclear's chair and actually go out through the bottom this gladly, making nothing out of everything, is quite remarkable. However, if you barely kept him alive while he was doing this, even he would come to a stop point and look at you and say, "What are you doing to me?" See, he will check himself somewhere on the line if you give him just a little bit of life to do it with. It's quite remarkable. Even he, in this obsession, well aimed in the direction of going out through the bottom and make nothing out of everything, sooner or later will haul himself up by his own bootstraps and realize that he's bad off. See? Now, there is, of course, theoretically, a reverse side to this. And sometimes we find both of these things simultaneously. An individual is on an obsession of having to have barriers, so that you free him a little bit, and he instantly invalidates himself. You get him so he changes his mind, and he feels better, and he immediately invalidates himself. How does he do this? Well, he's just trying to grab any barrier quick. Well, the funny part of it is this person already has too little if he's doing this. He doesn't have enough barrier. Also, he doesn't have enough freedom. So you could say these two things tend to go together in any case. If he hasn't enough freedom, he hasn't enough barriers. If he hasn't enough barriers, he hasn't enough freedom. Now, the individual who is in jail, you would say, has plenty of barriers and can only dream of freedom. Oh, that is an interesting observation because it is incorrect. The fellow who is in jail, if the government can keep him in jail, is incapable in the line of barriers. That becomes obvious, isn't it? Jail walls can hold him. Therefore, he doesn't have enough barriers to be able to dispense with barriers. And that's how and why he can be jailed. The individual who is dead in his head hasn't enough heads to be stuck in. Got that? All right. Then redefining the background intention of Scientology as the creation of a game or making a better game immediately brings us to the fact that life really is a game. But a person can have too little barrier, too little rules. He can have too much freedom, or he can have too little freedom. He can have any of these things, you see. And when he has them, he doesn't have a game. Life does not appear to be a happy thing to him. He is no longer able to fare well in it, and so he has a tendency to rebel against it. What's he rebelling against? He's rebelling against his lack of game. No matter what he says, that's what he's rebelling against. And we have then to define life as a game, and we get into this interesting thing that a game consists of freedom and restrictions. You can imagine a football game in which there are no rules. You maybe have played games where everybody had forgotten the rules. The chaos which results is wonderful to behold. The rules are the barriers. But think of a more factual barrier. Did you ever try to play football 1,000 feet above the ground? Can't be done. You need a field. And you may curse that field if you fall down on it, but at the same time, there is nothing there that's going to support the ball or you or the other players unless you have a field there. So the field is quite necessary to the playing of the game. A nuclear physicist who is willing to bomb out a vast number of cities to surfeit his own GE in sacrifices. A nuclear physicist obviously has such an inadequacy of barriers and such an inadequacy of game that he doesn't even know this playing field is germane to anything like a game. It's simply something that echoes back against a bomb. He himself couldn't possibly be there. You see, he couldn't possibly be there, because if he ever uses another atom bomb in this world, he will blow himself up, inevitably. He'll get it, too. And so he can't be there, so the irresponsibility which we get is lack of game. They've even lost any belief that there is a game. And they act like that. They are mad people. We had a young chap the other day who was out talking around with the world in general. He ran into a couple of nuclear physicists, and he came in, and he looked at me, and he was sort of white, and he says, "Do you know that?" He said, "What you say is really true." He said, "These people don't care in the least about blowing up a city." They say, "What's the difference between blowing up a city and killing one or two people?" There is no difference. Well, that's their motto. There is no difference. All right. Now, they've gone on to a make nothing out of it, haven't they? That's because they don't have any game. Do you know how you would cure that nuclear physicist? You'd have to give him a reality on a barrier. And as soon as he got a reality on a barrier, he could then get a reality on further barriers. And when he got more and more and more and more reality on more and more and more barriers, he'd all of a sudden wake up to the fact that he did have a ground beneath his feet. And waking up to that, he would find out that a game was possible to him. And only then would you make it possible for him to have any freedom. This is quite important as a basic tenet, because what I am telling you is not born out of the crucible of my own prefrontal lobes where I never think. It is born out of the years of research, investigation, and empirical findings which have been combed over with great thoroughness during the last 3 months in particular. And it shakes out to this. And what I tell you now is not told to you conditionally. It is told to you, backed up with a tremendous amount of experience and testing. Life is a game. A game consists of barriers. You say, "I want to make this preclear free." How do you make him free? At least give him one barrier. He has to have something to be free from. If he's nowhere, his freedom doesn't exist. He is in a very bad state if he has no restrictions or barriers. And this is proven out by the fact that merely by restoring people's barriers, we bring them up in intelligence, up in ability, up in happiness, and give them a game. See, it's borne out at once by that. Now, let's look at the rest of this rationale. The pay we get is communication. That's pay. I don't care whether the communication's in dollars, pence, words, or anything else. It is an interchange of particle or idea with our fellow man. That is pay. An individual can get into a position where he can't be paid. He won't talk. He cannot communicate. He won't acknowledge or originate communications. That man cannot be paid. The similar line with it is he can't be paid in money either. It's very odd. You say this fellow, this strong, silent man, is well off and knows how to hold his peace and all that sort of thing. We built up a great myth about this glory of silence. And we start examining and we find out that he went insane years ago. Only he doesn't know how to talk, so nobody found out. Now, communication is an interesting thing because it requires a certain freedom. You have to be able to speak through an openness before you, at least to some slight distance. But what do you know? It requires terminals. So once again, we have freedom and terminals as a requisite to communication. Without mass and havingness and space, we do not have communication, and we cannot be paid. It's quite interesting, but very true. Now, life does an interesting thing. A living being, that is to say, a thetan, a livingness called a thetan, thinks mass out of existence. You put a thetan into some mass and let him figure for a little while, and all of a sudden, there's a hole in the mass. He's the best Jim Dandy little auger hole maker you ever saw in your life. He's a driller from a way back. Now, as he thinks then, he as-is-es. He knocks out of existence adjacent mass. All right, if this is the case, in order to think or use thought, there should be something to as-is. And what do you know? A fellow in a native state doesn't think. The fun of thinking is not his. In a native state, he doesn't think. He merely makes a postulate, and then non sequitur may make another postulate, and this postulate's not related to any other postulate, and then he can make another postulate, and he can undo the postulates he just made. But that's fine, but they're not consecutive. He has no consecutive time until he has a mass to connect these thoughts together, and so he gets consecutive thought or logic, and then, in the presence of mass, will think. Now, we're not talking about think down there around symbols. We're talking about the action we go through with our figuringness and our communicatingness and our plottingness and our logic and all the rest of these various things. And if you don't give a little kid something to think about, he's unhappy. So is a thetan in a native state. Don't kid yourself otherwise. Otherwise, he wouldn't turn right around and mock up a barrier. You can make a thetan as free as free as free, and he turns right around and mocks up a barrier. Why? So he can think, so he can be. Now, to grant life, there must be something to grant life to. This is quite important. To grant life, there must be something to grant life to. And I mean something. It's all very well for an individual in a native state to postulate, I now grant life. Look, he's alive. what is he going to grant life to? There is nothing to grant life to. The way he actually goes about it is to make some space and put an object in it and then say, that's alive. The whole subject of beingness, then, is wrapped up in two subjects, freedom and barriers. Life must have some freedom of motion, some lack of restriction, and some randomness in order to be interesting at all. But the randomness can only be measured by the lack of randomness in a barrier. And so we get randomness occurring when we can observe that there is no randomness in certain places. The granting of life requires something to grant life to. Therefore, if we made nothing out of everything, really, factually, nothing would be alive, because a thetan in his native state is not, as you and I would think of it, totally alive, because he is not doing. He is potentially alive. He does have awareness without anything to be aware of. And that's an embarrassing thing to be in. So he promptly puts out something to be aware of. And then he goes, tries to find Joe, so he can get Joe to agree that he has put something up, so that he can be reassured that there's something there to be aware of. Do you have that? He started a universe, and here he goes. All right. Now, a preclear will become as free as he is reassured of the existence of barriers. This material I'm giving you is very, very tightly packed. It's very hot. There's a lot of this material can take an awful lot of thinking and looking at. But that is very, very true. That he'll become as free as he is reassured of the existence of barriers. Chap's just been sitting in my office who has contacted and is auditing some of the famous names of the theater. Why'd he come see me? Well, I asked to see him, but I didn't ask to see him. I just asked him to give me a ring. And he came down to tell me that he didn't feel he was, this for this fellow to make this remark is fantastic. He didn't feel he was as good as he might be. Why? He's just got through contacting a lot of actors. Why does he suddenly run into an actor and feel he's not as good an auditor as he is? It's because an actor can do all of the things on a sort of an acting basis that you do in processing. Quite interesting. You do 8C, they're used to 8C. They've been directed all the time. You try to get them to glamorize their life, it's glamorized all the time. The game that they're playing is an interesting game. But the one thing he had overlooked was this. When an actor leans up against a, quote, stone wall, unquote, it is only a quarter of an inch thick. It's painted on canvas. His reality is very, very poor. And his reality is so poor that this auditor had not noticed it. I had audited some very famous actors, and I had to go far south of your worst preclear to discover the first atom of reality. What is reality? Reality is havingness and barriers, restrictions. In other words, we had to find these people who were totally free, evidently, some restrictions. They're totally free, but they're very unhappy. Well, they're not totally free because they don't have any barriers. And so we had to give them some barriers, and we had to run havingness processes on them, and when we had run havingness processes on them, we found that they were very capable people. Quite interesting that this would occur, because these bright, shiny people are evidently in wonderful condition as far as the world in general is concerned, and are miserable in their private lives. And this is, again, a question of barriers. All right. We know that a thetan will carry to extremes, making something and making nothing. You can have a thetan start obsessively making something, and he can't stop making it. You know, he keeps making it, and he makes it, and he makes it, and he makes it, and he makes it some more, and he makes it some more. That is an automaticity. You watch a thetan turn his machinery loose on this, and he keeps making this and making it and making it and making it. Why does he keep on making it? Because he hasn't got any. A thetan will make something until he has some. Obviously, then, if a person is creating problems, although he seems to be surrounded by thousands of problems, he actually has no problems at all. Actually, he has none. He really possesses none. These problems are quite unreal. They're quite ephemeral. They're merely drifting, as far as he's concerned, and he's not quite there. Until you give him a real problem that he knows is real, and it comes home to him, he really won't have any problem. Now, you get him to invent problems, he takes over the automaticity of problems to some degree, and sooner or later he'll say, you know, that's really a problem. That's really a problem. An armless wonder, without feet, trying to light a match. That's quite a problem. And it'll be some idiotically simple problem. There's his first reality on problems. But this man, again, is lacking in barriers. He is not free because there's nothing to be free from, and he's not sure it's there. The prisoner who has been in jail for years is then freed and is still in jail. This is not a problem of getting rid of the facsimiles of being in jail. It is a problem of finding some barriers he really can have. He never could have the jail. One of the ways to get out of jail is simply look around the walls and find out what part of the jail you can have. You'll be out. Now, the best definition I know of at the moment of auditing is that activity of bringing a balance between freedom and barriers. A balance between freedom and barriers. The game depends upon the restoration of freedom of choice on making something and making nothing. When an individual has a higher freedom of choice on making something and making nothing, he then can have a game. But if you give him a total choice, he once more does not have a game. Total choice, he doesn't have a game. There must be something hidden about that wall, or you cease to have a wall. Just look at ownership processing. Unless you mock up God or somebody to be the sole creator of that wall, unless you say, Joe did it and I can't contact him anymore because the telephone company's cut off his phone, you'll lose the wall. If you're aware of the totality of existence, you cease to have reality. So there must be something hidden. The not knowingness postulates must be in there somewhere in order to give for a person a complete grip on a game. You mustn't know who is going to win. That's one of the first not knowingnesses that we would recognize. Nobody would go to see a game if they knew the Tigers were going to beat the Seals today. So they're going to beat the Seals. Nobody would go out and see them do it. So what? That's a foregone conclusion. So that we get one of the world's great boxers, Jojo the Dogface Boy, who is known to have lost every fight of his career, versus the guy who has won every fight of his career, and nobody goes to see the match. The outcome is a foregone conclusion. So there must be some not knowingness in a game, and one of the not knowingnesses is that as long as you assign other authorship and other ownership to barriers, you continue to have them. All right. It is quite remarkable, then, that the game of auditing could be said to be exteriorization versus havingness. And now we're getting awfully practical, aren't we? It's exteriorization versus havingness. One of the truisms that goes right along with this is a fascinating one. An individual cannot have enough of anything until he has total freedom from it. But the way to give him total freedom from it is to give him enough of it. Those things which a person says he cannot have or doesn't like are simply things he cannot have enough of. Let me give you an example of this. First night nerves on the part of actors is this. They have not had an audience for several weeks. The second they start to have an audience again, they're in a not-have bracket on audiences, and it takes a couple of nights to run this out. You got that? See, their mask was down. That is why they are nervous, upset. Now, if they went 2 or 3 years without any audience at all, they would discover themselves in the interesting state of not being able to appear on a stage. They'd have to force themselves to be. Everything would start going wrong. You see that? Similarly with preclears. If you don't have preclears for a long time, you'll audit a preclear and find out he restimulates you. You're just saying you can't have a preclear, don't you see? The way to get over all of this with preclears is simply audit lots of preclears. Auditors who are auditing 12 and 14, 16 hours a day, some of them, by the way, you talk to them about restimulation and they say, huh? Oh, yes, you did say something about that in 1952. An auditor who is auditing every week or so for a couple of hours, preclear, has a headache. The auditor, the next couple of minutes, has a headache. Got it? He's got a scarcity of preclears. So we get to this. There can be too few universes. Fellow is in Mama's universe. There he is in Mama's universe, very patently in Mama's universe. What's the matter with him? He's not in enough universes. That's what's wrong with him. It's not that he's in Mama's universe. It is that he is not in enough universes. So beingness processing was a wonderful and fabulous process, and that beingness processing was simply this. It was trying to find out how many other universes he could get into, and so he would spring out of Mama's universe. You get the idea? Go in the direction of havingness and more universes. What universes can he be in, solidly and certainly? And you will discover that he will free from undesired universes. Because he'll be able to handle the universe the second it becomes a desirable universe. The reason it's an undesirable universe is simply this. It is so scarce that if he desired it, he'd as-is it. And so he mocks up this whole detestation. And anything you could think of to keep himself backed off from taking away from himself that last universe. Give him more universes. Interesting, but very true and very workable. Old beingness processing was a very easily run process. You simply ask the individual, what could you be? What else could you be? Now, oddly enough, because you have the individual thinking, you would have to remedy havingness while you were running it. That's a great oddity. You would have to remedy havingness while you were running it. All right. Any time that you get a thetan in bad shape, you could say then, his freedom depends, or his lack of freedom depends upon his inability to have. His freedom is restored to him by reassuring him on his ability to have. He will go higher on the tone scale to the exact degree that he is reassured that he can have. And this is where we ran into old-time certainty. We must be certain. The preclear must be certain. Is he absolutely sure of that? You get the idea. When he's so sure of it, when he can have it, we have it, and otherwise not. Now, the auditing which is done on this basis is very, very simple. The auditing commands are as follows on this process. Best universe havingness is run, look around you and tell me what you can have. The next one is look around you and tell me what you would permit to remain where it is. The next one is, what could you dispense with? Look around you. What could you dispense with? At no time would you run any of these on his bank, because he'll chew his bank up. You wouldn't ask an individual, what could you have? You just wouldn't ask him such a question. No, because he'll as-is his bank, and he'll cave his bank in. What you want to ask him is, look around here and tell me what you can have. Keep him in present time on the subject, and you'll add to his havingness and barriers. Otherwise, you'll cave him in. All right, that's run on the mesh universe. And the next one is standard mock-up havingness. You say, mock it up, push it in. When you've done that thoroughly, you run, mock it up, let it remain. And when you've done that thoroughly, you say, mock it up and throw it away. And when he can throw away one cleanly, you've remedied his havingness on a mock-up basis. There's another one that goes in this. You ask an individual to mock up something, and then ask him what he can have of what he have just mocked up. And then mock it up again. Now what can you have of it? And he will tell you some interesting things. This is a wonderful way to separate universes. And there is another one. Any time you are going to get a preclear to mock up anything, for heaven's sakes, have him mock it up and handle it in some fashion or another. He must not be left on a total automaticity of mock-up, don't you see? You have him mock it up and have him handle it, have him do something with it, or at least determine something about it. And, much more important, any time you get a preclear to think a thought, for heaven's sakes, give him some mass to think it about. You got it? Otherwise, you'll lazy his bank, and you'll put him full of more holes than a Swiss cheese. If you grant life to anything, you'll lazy it. So, therefore, you must put some energy there to grant life, too. You want somebody to get over cold? Ask him, mock up some cold germs. Grant life to him. When he mocks them up, there they are. When he grants life to them, they go. And he'll eventually wind up handling a cold. In essence, auditing is getting a barrier and throwing the barrier away. Now, that is modern Scientology. And that is the way it is done. I want to be a little more specific now concerning the actuality of the auditing commands and the auditing presence. It might surprise you that communication can be done too much of. Might surprise you. But you take a preclear having this as nothing, and you all of a sudden start communicating. Two-way comm. Thrrr, no havingness. Communication as is havingness. At least talk about a terminal. At least talk about Bill or Joe. At least talk about somebody who is, or the wall or the pump or something. Otherwise, he'll talk about and chew up his bank. When people do not have enough to talk about, they chew up their banks. Just as simple as that. Now, where would we pick up most preclears? Where would we pick them up on the tone scale? It would be below havingness. Well below havingness. Curious. They can't have anything. No barriers. Which means the reality is poor. We can establish that reality with speed by simply telling them, look around you and tell me what you can have. The person's liable to tell you anything, everything. I can have anything and everything. Oh, no, he can't. If he tells you something like that, he's crazy. We have to ask him to look over the room carefully and tell us one thing in it he could have. And do you know he'll sometimes get very impatient with you? This is the preclear who is so short of havingness that anything drives him into a rage or into apathy. When they start picking at you as an auditor, when they start finding fault with you and saying nam nam and trying to blow a session and so forth, all that's wrong with them is their havingness is being badly upset. There's something wrong with havingness. Now, you say, look around and tell me one thing in the room you can have. And the individual looks around and finally, just to humor you, says, well, I can have the mantle. The thought will come to him at once, can I, you know? Also, he detaches the mantle from the window, and it would surprise you very much that he is so anxious about barriers that as he looks at the room, the mantle is part and parcel to the window. And such a person would answer this question of look around you and tell me what you can have in a generality because all things are one thing and there are no separatenesses anywhere. He merely is anxious about having this. All right. Now, the individual who has ridges pulled in, who is all caved in one way or the other, whose messed possessions are in a chaos, who is getting sick and so forth, has an anxiety about terminals. And the first anxiety he has is about himself. Now, I'll give you a little interesting case history on the subject of bodies and exteriorization that just follows up from this at once. We had an individual who was very thin, very caved in, quite upset, easily upset by almost anything. And in the process of being audited, this individual would at once become very nervous. Just didn't want anything to do with auditing. On a rehash of this person's life, it was discovered this person had what you might call a poor man's orientation. He had never been able to have anything. Everybody was poor, 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 you see. And here was havingness just almost gone. Yet this person was in a frightful state. He was in a dreadful state physically. What was he doing? Well, according to his statement, he was trying to get rid of his body. Oh, he was? Was this really what he was doing? Oh, yes, according to his intentions, this is what he was doing. He was trying to get rid of his body. Now, this sounds very, very funny to you, because the very thing he was trying to do was to make sure he didn't lose it. And that was why he was telling you that he was trying to get rid of it. Everything he did, everything he said, was a mislead, even to himself. He didn't have anything. And so the thought of losing anything, if he were to lose an old last year's newspaper, no significance whatsoever, which he had used up till that time to sit under a flower pot and be dripped on, if he were to have lost that, he would have probably come down with a cold or a stomach ache or something of the sort. Why? The loss of anything would make him clutch the body harder. Now, the obvious solution for this person, the obvious solution was to remedy his heaviness of bodies. But how? Because he couldn't mock anything up. He couldn't create anything, and he couldn't concentrate very long on his auditor. All right, if he couldn't do any of these things, we'd say all roads were closed. I'll tell you what I did with this guy. I'm giving you more about the case now than I knew when I was auditing it. That'd be natural, of course. But I understand the case better now, 4 years later, than I did when I was auditing it. And yet I audited it successfully. Reason why is because I had already noticed several things empirically and was doing these things. I started tearing pieces of paper out of the tablet, wadding them up and handing them to him. Just doing nothing but that. I'd tear up a piece of paper out of the tablet and I'd hand it to him. Now, when I asked for the first piece of paper back, I didn't get it. I did this because I noticed he was holding on to his possessions. He would not put his coat down on a chair. His coat was clutched over his arm, see? So I gave him this piece of paper and the next piece of paper and the next piece of paper and the next piece of paper, and he kept taking them. Anything you'd hand him, he'd take. More paper, I'd wad up another one and hand it to him. We were having no conversation during this time at all, and he was very intensely interested, which is very funny. And more paper and more, you know, he stuffed them in his pockets. He held them inside his coat. And finally, one fell on the floor, and he picked it up as though it just gold, you know. He thought it over for a moment, and he dropped it on the floor again. We picked it up, and I held out my hand for it, and he gave it to me. I gave him 4 or 5 more sheets of paper, and I asked him for one, and he finally gave me one, and he finally gave me 2. And when he left, he contentedly threw them all in the wastebasket, and his case was on the mend at that point. We just played around with pieces of paper. That was crude. That has worked out to be eventually a very spotty technique, because in most cases they're afraid of the paper. They'll flinch. But in this one case, that was just a happy circumstance. And later on, when I invented creative processing, I remembered this and started to do this havingness thing of walking it up and pull it in and throw it away. We called it gita at first, simply give and take. And then expanded gita, which was much fancier. And now all this time up, we get mock-up remedy of havingness, as differentiated from a messed universe remedy of havingness, with now 3 steps. 1, mock it up and push it in on the body. Never pull it in. Never let a pre-clear pull in anything. Push it in. Mock it up and push it in. Mock it up and let it remain. Mock it up and throw it away. Now, you may have to do many of them, and there are many tricky things you can do in order to accomplish this. You can make him mock up 8 of them and let them remain and throw away 1, and then in order to throw away a second one, he would have to mock up about 20 more in order to get rid of a second one. In other words, we give him a sufficiency and find out he can throw things away if we give him a sufficiency of them. The technique actually had its earliest beginnings with those pieces of paper. Now, this individual's grip on his body relaxed, and as time went on and auditing went on and so forth, he was able to handle eventually facsimiles and do all sorts of things, which I know now was not necessary to make him do. What I really should have done was to have kept on with having this, because we had already entered the case and we were doing wonderfully well, very successful. Now, the case was successful in the final run, but it just took me hours and hours and hours more than I thought. Now, Washington, D.C., in recent months, has been getting worse and worse at the clinic on the subject of avoiding the remedy of havingness. Although direct instructions were finally issued a few weeks ago, they have not yet caught up. Why? These boys are on the kick of making nothing out of something, and somebody will have to take the whole kit and caboodle, roughly, and start handing them pieces of paper, which I am doing by Western Union Cable. I am remedying their havingness. I compliment them and then kick their teeth in. So their attention is on those cables, that's for sure. And they will listen. And they're actually already listening. There were only two auditors that weren't listening last week. They weren't listening. But these two, oddly enough, were two people that I know individually have a terrible allergy to having. All right. I was told a very short time ago something very interesting. I was told that groups in Scientology didn't stick together and weren't very successful. The person who told me said at the same time, since I have been in Scientology, I've just gotten rid of practically all of my mess, and, you know, it's just been an outflow of my mess, and I really not gotten very far and not gotten anything. Are there any relationship between these two remarks? You said it. This individual got on an obsessive no-have. There was no reality on the existing barrier. The individual then picked up Scientology, misinterpreted it across the boards. Although there might have been some of this in Scientology, early Scientology, it didn't go this far. And this individual started to make nothing out of everything in the way of possession. Well, of course, where would that throw this person? Down tone scale. Now, the group gets together with this person, and they start making nothing out of everything. And this person runs this group with nothing but sweetness and light. Just A-R-C all the way. Never rap anybody's knuckles. Group's going to fall apart. Why? There's no barriers, and everybody's making nothing out of everything, so I told this person something about having this, and all of a sudden this person cognited. Matter of fact, cognited with a grief charge. Cried for a moment. That's right, that's true. And all of a sudden got the hang of this. And I drove it home by saying this. As leader of this group, you are expected to provide barriers. This person immediately thought of restrictions or rules. And I said, now, you think that over for a moment. Provide barriers. They expect you to provide a place for them to meet. Is that right? Oh, yes. Well, now, that's a set of barriers, isn't it? Yes. Yes, we've always had trouble finding a place to meet, come to think about it. Well, naturally, they'd have trouble making nothing out of everything in sight. They would naturally make nothing out of any ability to acquire quarters, wouldn't they? Furthermore, anybody starts rampaging around in this group, sweetness and light, sweetness and light. And they just hope that somehow or other he lazes is in some peculiar fashion. Instead of somebody saying, Joe, you see that chair? Sit down and shut up. You know? Something very funny happened since we've been running more modern havingness processes on the free group. Something happened here a few weeks ago in the free group, which was very amusing. One chap who had just been getting away with, well, murder is a light word for it, has been upsetting everybody and telling them how Scientology is no good and all this sort of thing. And this individual was suddenly collared really actively by a couple of group members. And they wouldn't let him talk back to the auditor, and they shut him up and ejected him. The auditor is very pleased. Said, the group is developing spirit. It's protecting itself. Well, the group was perfectly willing at this time, through its auditing, to lay down some restrictions. Now, you as an auditor lay down certain restrictions. If you let a preclear come any time he pleases, he's not going to be very well off. You're laying down restrictions. I don't care how sweet you are about it. You're still laying down restrictions. You say to the fellow, now remember something real, and he says there are two windows in the room. You say, no, 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 remember something real. That is the restriction, isn't it? Well, do you know if you're dull enough to say, well, yes, there are two windows in the room? You know his havingness drops? Got that? His havingness drops. Now, I don't say that you should be rough or misemotional with a preclear. But you should hold them to a regimen of auditing within the restrictions of auditing. This is no invitation to be mean to a preclear, because being mean to people is only one and a very crude way of putting up a limitation or a barrier. And it unfortunately doesn't extend into further barriers. It cuts the communication, and that's the end of that. So, you can, with great ease, handle people rather heavily and still get away with it. Now, it's an odd thing that a very successful auditor here in London is about as heavy-footed. I don't say his results are good, but he's certainly got a good-sized practice. I don't even think he's a good auditor, just between ourselves, because I haven't checked into him lately, but he didn't used to us. But he is fantastic. He gives preclears orders about their private lives and so forth. Now, he isn't doing well for his preclears or cases the way we should. The only tool he has that is workable is the fact that he will lay down, with no slightest doubt, the darndest restrictions you ever heard. Now, don't you talk to your wife this whole week. I'm not going to have you invalidating me at the next session. Well, to some degree, then, no matter how crudely, this individual must be remedying some people's havingness for orders, isn't he? He must be putting up barriers and restrictions. Well, that is a very poor way to go about it. He loses preclears, too. He doesn't make too many of them well off. He has failures. He himself was getting spooked a few days ago and told me confidentially that he'd better come in for a refresher, because he just woke up to the fact that there must be something he was missing. something like he had just heard about Scientology, just about the same cognition level. Now, where we look over auditors and their behavior, we discover that they have two assets which they seldom suspect, is a certain firmness, a certain solidness and beingness in themselves, which is a reassurance to the preclear. The auditor does not look dismayed. He is just not swept back off his chair and away from the desk at the thought of this individual's not improving. Fella says, well, you've audited me for 2 days now, and I still have my legs cut off at the knee. You know? And the auditor is not immediately felled by this remark. He sits there, and he looks at the fellow pleasantly, and he says, I'm aware of that. Now, you sit over there. A manner of that character, you see. And the other odd thing is the aliveness of the auditor. The aliveness of the auditor. The auditor just snores through it all, see, you know, who is just dead calm all the time and not very alert and not very interested and so forth, is going to an opposite extreme. An auditor must look and sound alive. You know what an auditor is presenting then? He is presenting a firmness and a beingness. He is, then, a certain restrictingness as he sits there. You have to come to a certain place to see him. You have certain hours in which to see him. You're expected to do certain things during the session and between sessions. You're not supposed to get drunk tonight, no. You know, that sort of thing. And come in here sober and be on time tomorrow. You know, any auditor will have to hand out remarks of this character just to keep his preclear sort of in line till he gets him out of the woods. You'd be surprised. But he has to present a firmness. He has to be very definite and positive. These are all in the line of being a barrier, you see. And at the same time, he has to be alive. And that is in the direction of freedom. You might say he's a live barrier. the warmth and interest and quickness in his voice is definitely therapeutic. Definitely. And so is the firmness and the certainty with which he speaks. Now he says, bad auditor says, well, now, I think I'm supposed to ask you now, I remember now. Recall? No, it's recall. Something real. No, it's recall something real, real. The immediate response to him is that he's not an auditor. Why? Now, supposing you couldn't think, you ought to be enough of an actor to do this, you see. Supposing you couldn't think of the auditing command. It's look around this. The pre-clear has just got through screaming in 8 keys. You were worried about the session running overtime. Everything else is going to hell in a balloon in your vicinity, and you have 2 other appointments, and the landlady has said, one more screaming pre-clear, and you're going to be kicked out of here. And so he can't quite remember the auditing command to remedy this fellow's having this fast enough to keep him going out the bottom and finish the session. Well, whatever he says, for God's sakes, let him say it certainly. Even if it's elephants will now walk through the door, for heaven's sake, say it as though it were really real and real true. And that certainty all by itself will echo in the preclear to steady him down. You got it? Now, you'll notice in dummy auditing that some odd things will occur. They occur to people who are auditing dummy auditing commands with certainty. And I hear that somebody in under dummy auditing has exteriorized. No significance in the auditing command at all. Now, why would he possibly exteriorize? The dummy commands must have been uttered with great certainty. The individual then is confronted with a sufficiency of barrier, a sufficiency of resistance, a sufficiency of reality and certainty. And he says, well, that's all right. The world's pretty real. I'm all reassured about the whole thing. I'll back out of my head. You see the immediate result. So an auditor's presence is again measured up against these 2 things of firmness and freedom. It's sort of, if you do exactly as I say, you will be free. It apparently is a paradox, but it's actually very true. And so, as we go over this whole subject, we find these 2 things echoing back and forth. And just because we're in a Western society that's been too pegged down too often, and things have been too scarce too often, we shouldn't go out on this kick of freedom, 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 freedom. The end product of this politically is anarchy. I've been a member of an anarchy. It was an interesting anarchy. A gang of guys at a period early in the war who didn't have any rank left. There were no general headquarters to issue anybody any orders. Everybody was acting on his own initiative. Darndest anarchy you ever got mixed up in. But this anarchy rapidly evolved itself out of an anarchy and into a solid government of its own. Why? Why did it do this? Because it was confronted by another barrier called the Japanese Imperial Navy. There was enough barrier there to bring order into this anarchy. Otherwise, it simply would have scattered to the 4 winds. You see this? So an anarchy, confusion, chaos, these things are relatively synonymous. They steady down when confronted by a barrier, even though it isn't a governing or commanding barrier. One of the best ways in the world to cure a communist is to give him 5 pounds. You give him 4 walls. Give him something. I used to know one in Hollywood. He used to come around every once in a while to the apartment and try to sell the guys who were there on communism. Wonderful thing. He was the glibest fellow you ever saw in your life. I mean, communism was very convincing, except he always had it different or wrong or something. And I saw him a couple of years later. I was back in Hollywood, and I happened to run into him on the street, and he wished me well in a very sober sort of way and walked over and climbed into his Cadillac and gave me a ride down to the studio. And I Of course, as a ride. I said, how are you doing lately? Oh, I'm doing fine. I'm assistant director out here at Monogram Pictures, and I'm just doing wonderfully well, and so forth. And what are your political affiliations these days? And the fellow tells me without cracking a smile, Republican, of course. In other words, enough barrier presented itself to him, enough limitation, restriction presented itself to him, so that he then could free himself out of the confusion he was in politically. And he did free himself out of it. Even though republicanism is sort of dragging the hole in after you, he nevertheless did. All right. Now, the auditor at all times must regard these two things, and you as a Scientologist must realize that Scientology can trap and free, and that you audit to trap and free. You got it? He's in a trap. Give him enough traps. Got it? And he'll free. As long as he's actually sure that he's got enough traps. Follow that carefully. And then you win. But if you were always unwilling to see anything trapped, if you're always unwilling to see anything unhappy, if you're always unwilling to see anything sick, and if you yourself go out along the line of continuing to separate yourself from all the evils of the world, you will never conquer them. They will never be conquered. I dare say people die because there's not enough death. That's a state that is missing. They go 70 years and kick the bucket. Now, where along the line do you draw the line in Scientology between actually using it to enslave? How do you really enslave? This should just be quite revelatory to you. How do you really become a slave master? How do you really entrap? By denying. Got it? That is the real slavery. It's by cutting down all the havingness of everyone in your vicinity. By cutting down all the abilities of the individual in your vicinity to even possess barriers. And if you cut all these things down, you'll make a slave. The way to make a slave is to jail a few people. You know, once in a while. It's just not enough jailing, that's all. Say, there's too much crime around here. Police are now going to pick up every third person in the entire country and throw them in jail. And we'll cut the crime down. Obviously, no such plan can be carried out because that's enough jailing. Look at it that way. Kind of a goofball way to look at it. There's not enough jailing to do all this. But if you did have enough jailing to do all this, the country would be a jail so everybody in it would be free. The best example of this is an income tax. Everybody is kind of in jail and being fined by the government for income tax, aren't they? Actually, if the government taxed enough, the public could do something about it. So obviously taxes are too low. They're insufficiently high. They're still being collected. If you partially remedy somebody's situation and don't remedy him well, this partially remedies marital situation so that he can just barely tolerate his married life. You've enslaved him. Maybe he had it worked out before that he had enough overt act motivators, you know, enough overt acts had been done to him so he can separate out of this situation. You come along, you run some of them out. He stays married to this girl, she murders him the next year. Get the idea? See, so that is only a half solution. And in measuring up problems and handling the realities of existence, you certainly better pay attention to some of these little minor factors because they are quite important. You are alive, you are living, you are being, and as such, you, of course, are handling life within the reality of life. It's an unfortunate thing from the standpoint of the world that an individual gets into this restrictive category and then recoils from it and then goes up the spout in trying to get rid of all restrictions. There's something wrong there, you see. Something wrong when that happens. Well, make sure that you as an auditor don't let that happen. You could let it happen by running nothing but significances on your preclears. nothing but significances, run out all their problems. Problems, just one brand of havingness at a certain level. Just run them all out. Run out all of their psychosomatics. Run out everything. Erase it. How a man can live through a totality of erasure of this character would be difficult to conceive. Do you know the only reason that Dianetics auditing was possible was because we erased an engram which took the significance out of the mass and gave him the mass back. And that's a little hidden reason as to why it worked. You could erase the mass and leave most of the mass. Before that time, he couldn't have the mass, but now it becomes insignificant mass, and so he can have it. And you've increased his havingness, and that's how the auditing worked. Now, today we do this on a much broader line. We increase his significances, or we increase his barriers, increase his freedom. We go out in two ways, really, havingness and exteriorization. Now, I want to give you a little touch-up here very rapidly. Don't keep shoving things into the fellow's body and call it a remedy of havingness. Got it? Just don't do such a thing. Don't run only this technique. Look around this room and tell me what you could have. Mock up that mock-up now and tell me what you could have of it. You get the idea? That is very, very bum, lopsided auditing. Why? It'll eventually overbear. The fellow will have too many barriers. He'll have too much restriction to the degree of exteriorization he could do from it. So we must always remedy havingness. We look around the room, find out what we can have. Then look around the room and find out what we would permit to remain. Then we look around the room and find out what we could dispense with, or, an alternate question, what we're separate from. Do you recognize the separateness? Now, being separate from something is still having it to some degree. So there's those three stages, in, static, and out. And so that we run these properly, run all three of them, we're just fine. But don't keep hammering at this without ever thinking once about freeing anything. It is possibly true that by a thorough receive, remain, and throw away, you would change the preclear's mind enough about central problems and things like that, and shift his masses around enough so that he would get pretty happy and he'd feel a lot better. You would rather do that than do a bum job of anything else, you see. It'd be better to just do that, just a remedy of havingness, and then skip the rest of it, than to do a botched-up job of the rest of it and never remedy havingness. Infinitely better. You still get somewhere. You still show enormous gains in personality and IQ if you just did nothing but this remedy of havingness, you see. But that isn't all of it. There is the matter of the fellow has lived. He does have problems. And once you give him a reassurance of barriers, he is now entitled to some freedom. But you don't give him any more freedom than he has barriers to reassure him. And so you play these two things one against the other, and you get there. It isn't totally possible to go all the way up the line simply by giving guys barriers, 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 any more than it's totally possible to make a free man by putting him in every jail in the land. See, we wouldn't keep putting the fellow in jail, hoping someday he'd be free, because only the accident of death would free him. And he wouldn't be free as far as his body was concerned. So although it's theoretically true that he can't tolerate walls and therefore can be jailed, that's true. Putting him in jail all the time is not going to cure it. You'd have to get him to change his mind about the adequacy of jails, see? He'd have to have enough jails, and when he changed his mind about enough jails, he then could never be jailed, you see? So you're in a very special category of changing people's minds. You see that? You're in a very special category of changing people's minds. They really don't change their minds simply by running into masses and away from them, you see. You're an auditor. You're handling the thinkingness and livingness of a person. And so you can change their minds. And these things are theoretically true, but they don't work out in the physical universe by dramatization and action. Just as a person can go on forever dramatizing a rage engram without ever wearing it out, so he can go on forever living in this universe without ever becoming sufficiently aware of it to plow himself in any other direction. See? So he could go forever on an unawareness basis. You're the expert in awareness, and you use that awareness to get him aware of barriers and aware of freedom. If you do that perfectly, you win. And that is the game of auditing. Thank you.